on Up, episode 21. They're on a mission from God. They, of course, being myself, Ryan, my co-host, Mr. Kevin Bradway.
Hello.
Kevin back again with a brand new edition for his second, go-around as full-fledged co-host. We did an introductory three-man weave before my regular co-host, Dave, left to go have his baby. Baby has been had. All is well, and Dave will be rejoining us here at some point. But whether it's Kevin, whether it's Dave, whether it's just me, we always do a tagline at the beginning of our show. This week, They're on a Mission from God is in reference to a movie that we talked a little bit about last week. Kevin, do you have any guesses? I don't actually. I mean, you know, you can just say yes or no.
I do now.
Because I would hate for you to say, yeah, I think I know what it is. I think it's Boondock Saints, and give it away, because that'd be terrible.
Yeah, I won't guess that it's Boondock Saints.
All right, good. So if you do have a guess on what our tagline could be for this week, email it to us, moviesonup@gmail.com. You can tweet at us, @moviesonup, or you can go to our Facebook page, which you can access from... That's a good question. You can get it at our Facebook page by going to our website, moviesonup.com, clicking on the Facebook link, and that'll get you there. Either of those three ways, you can submit to us your guess for this week's tagline. If you get it right, if we pick you, we will send you out a prize package. And our prize package is beginning to take shape. I've got some buttons that I've ordered this week. So yeah, queue up in line for those, fellas. Thanks in large part to your buddy Morgan for redoing our logo and actually making a logo that is button worthy, so to speak.
Yeah, it looks nice. I'm proud of him.
Yes, I guess we're both proud of him. So double thanks to Morgan for helping out on that. One more thing, while we're just kind of clearing up some business here at the beginning, Fantasy Film Ball, which is a like half-cocked idea I had probably about a month back. Dave and I did our picks for Fantasy Film Ball. Kevin, you still haven't done your picks. Today might be a good day.
Maybe.
So you don't have your picks, do you?
No.
Judging by that, oh.
Yeah. You want me to do it?
I want you to do it. Your girlfriend.
You want me to do it now? You want me to do
no,
it
No, I
end?
Want you to do it now. No. Now I've got budgeted for Fantasy Film Ball deadline.
All right.
Later, which isn't budgeted for anything, is when I'm going to put Kevin on the spot and make him give me his five
All
movies.
Right. That gives me a little bit to think about it then.
Yeah, you've got, you know, roughly 50
I know
minutes.
Three of them.
All right, so you need to come up with two movies in 50 minutes while I'm talking. Kevin's deadline is 50 minutes from now. Everyone else, your deadline is shit, the 30th, which is... Like, what? Is that today? No. That's next week.
Yeah.
You guys have a whole week once this goes up. I've got no idea what day it is. As long as you know what day it is and you submit your five movies to us, moviesonup@gmail.com, that'd probably be the best way to do it. Or if you tweet them @moviesonup, we can probably look there too. But then everybody else is going to see your five picks. And what are you going to pick on? You're going to pick five movies that come out sometime between now and the end of the year. Every $10 million the movie makes at the box office domestically, you'll get 1 point. For every Oscar nomination the movie receives, you will get 5 points. And for every win, you will get 10 points. And the winner receives this prize pack that I've been talking about for, about 3 months. It'll probably include a button. And we're trying to put together some extra special things for our Fantasy Film Ball winner. So... be sure to get your submissions in on time, which is the 30th. That's it for our top of the show segment, which has gone on way too long. What are we going to get to today? I'm glad you asked. We've got news from a bunch of things that I thought were awesome when I was 10, and that is Marvel, Legos, and Baywatch, among other things. I will also talk about a guy that I don't like now, and I wouldn't have liked when I was 10 either, because he's kind of a dick, and that is, of course, Michael Bay. But before we get in to Michael Bay, before we get into Marvel or Legos. Normally, you know, Dave and I do over-under. Kevin and I tried something a little bit different last week where we were just going to kind of guess what was going to do the best at the box office and what was of the new releases and what was going to do the worst. We were both in pretty sound agreement that the Clint Eastwood movie Trouble with the Curve was going to have trouble with the box office, but we were wrong.
Yeah, we were. It actually finished third, making $12.1 million, which is way more money than I would have expected. I would have put it maybe eighth or so if we had to pick where it would have finished. So third was definitely interesting. We both said either End of Watch or House at the End of the Street. They actually finished less than $1 million apart.
And I think we were pretty much, we could have gone either way with those. And I think we did. You said one, and I was like, yep, I absolutely agree. And then I read it back the other way. So that's about so, how much
but
we how,
But End of Watch actually was the one that came out at number one. Finishing out the top 10, we've got Finding Nemo 3D hanging around at number four, still bringing in $9.4 million. Resident Evil Retribution, which was number one last week, still made $6.7 million. Dread, which was a wide release this week, made less money than I would have expected at $6.3 million, which isn't very much for a movie of that magnitude. Finishing out the top 10, we got The Master, which this week was on 783 screens, up like 700 and
from,
some screens from last week.
Four?
Yeah, yeah. So it made $5 million. The Possession, Lawless, Paranorman. We still had Dark Knight on 948 screens. This week it also brought in $1.26 million. Last week it brought in about $2.1 million. So it's still making money. The only limited release I mentioned was The Perks of Being a Wallflower. It was only on four screens, but it made $244,000.
Not bad. So the one that I'm most interested in, the Dawson movie, Backwards, that didn't go anywhere, right?
Yeah.
Didn't go backwards.
Yes, it went backwards.
Sorry, I will just apologize to Mr. Van de Beek right now. I did not make it out to any of the screens that your film was on.
So, hey, yo, Dawson, get at me.
The ball.
Get at me, Dawson.
Yeah, movies like us at Movies On Up. That'd be pretty rad.
Speaking of The Master, I actually went and saw it this weekend. I made the trek about an hour and a half and drove to see it in a theater with about 10 people. The first thing I want to say, Joaquin Phoenix is stellar in it. He plays kind of a crazy guy with no direction, and he does it
kind of like Joaquin Phoenix.
Yeah, yeah, go figure. He plays Freddy Quell, and he's awesome. I, not having seen every movie that came out this year, would be very surprised if he didn't win Best Actor. I definitely think a nomination's coming his way. My other thoughts on it, Paul Thomas Anderson's kind of known to challenge his audience, but this is the most he's ever challenged them. Maybe I'm a little dense. But 3 days later, after seeing the movie, I still am very confused about what I saw in parts. And I'm going to need to see it a second or a third time because there's just definitely some confusing things you have to work out in your own mind. But overall, great characters, great performances. There's some beautiful shots of scenery. But like I said, I'm going to have to give it a go at least one or more times if it comes local.
So let me ask you a couple things as one of the masses that has not yet seen this movie. We kind of talked a bit last week from TIFF. The buzz on The Master was not as high. It wasn't getting quite as much praise as some people thought it might. People may be less than impressed with the movie. I mean, do you have that kind of similar, it was all right?
I knew it was about 2.5 hours going in. So I expected pacing to kind of feel slow. But overall, I expected to leave and be like, whoa, that was awesome. The last hour of the movie, very, very slow crawl. And overall, the story was just kind of like, eh.
Okay.
Eh.
All right, so.
It's a character
on
study.
On a scale of, like, good to bad, it was eh.
It was good, yeah.
When that movie first came, when we were first talking about this movie, the thing that people most said was, oh, this is Paul Thomas Anderson making fun of Scientology. And then he came out and said, you know what, that's not really what I'm doing. There are some similarities to Scientology. I mean, after seeing it, did you think he was ripping on Scientology?
It's absolutely about Scientology.
Okay.
Yeah. I know a personal friend of mine who is a Scientologist, and I
think— Is it John Travolta?
It's not. Or Will Smith or Tom Cruise or you name it. But I probably get assassinated for revealing what he revealed to me. But knowing a handful of things about Scientology and then seeing the movie, I could follow. It's about Scientology.
Was it more about Scientology than Battlefield Earth?
Yes.
Wow.
All right.
Fantastic. Better Scientology movie, Battlefield Earth or The Master?
Battlefield Earth had some of the better special effects of that year. So, I mean,
this did not.
The thing I was kind of curious about and looking forward to was that, a Paul Thomas Anderson movie, Boogie Nights, the main character mentions John Holmes. So it's kind of, it's a fictional movie taking place in a real universe. Mm-hmm. I wish that this movie would have mentioned L. Ron Hubbard just because you would have known, you know, whether to differentiate the two. But I feel the fact that L. Ron Hubbard or Scientology wasn't mentioned, you know, gives you a hint that this is totally about Scientology.
Right. But just without hitting you on an earth, without smashing the point, so to speak. The Hulk set to smash the box office solo, but not so fast, says Marvel Studios president Kevin Feige. MTV did an interview with him. A couple different things came out of that interview. It was a pretty informative little interview there by Music Television. The first big thing that he put out was about our supersized hero. There will, in fact, be a standalone Hulk movie, and we are probably looking at Mark Ruffalo playing Dr. Banner and lending his likeness to the Hulk as well. We could be looking at a World War Hulk movie or a possibly Planet Hulk storyline, but we're not going to see it until after Avengers 2, which won't be until 2015. Are you a little bit surprised by that?
Yes, somewhat. My thoughts on the Hulk, regardless of how much money Ang Lee or Louis Leterrier's Hulks made, Hulk and Incredible Hulk, respectively, I see both of those movies as failures.
I think Marvel did too, yeah.
Because, like I said, even though they made money, no one was really pleased with them, especially like Hulk fans, just comic book fans in general. So I think going at it from a World War Hulk or Planet Hulk storyline, I think will help get the critical praise to match the financial success, because people are going to go see it just because Hulk's name's on it.
And I think a lot of people kind of took away from the Avengers that Hulk was one of the more enjoyable parts of that, of what was an enjoyable movie.
Right. Definitely the Hulk got some depth in Avengers, which he had been lacking previously. He was kind of just a one-dimensional character. And he had a couple comedy scenes, and I think people really enjoyed the Hulk in the Avengers.
Yeah, I think some of the like absolute laugh-out-loud moments were due in large part to the Hulk.
Yeah, definitely. The interesting thing about this new Hulk release also is that Guillermo del Toro is making a Hulk television show, or at least he's pitching one, and this movie could spin off of the TV series.
There is that kind of whole overarching movie and television aspect of what we're calling roughly, and I guess the Hulk really wouldn't even be phase two. That would be like probably phase three because it's after Avengers 2. But, you know, with Whedon really kind of trying to develop an Avengers spinoff type show for ABC, that I think was supposed to be phase two, but we're not sure that really there's going to be any superhero tie-ins to that. It's just going to have maybe something to do with S.H.I.E.L.D. I'm not sure. But there are a lot of things that, you know, they're looking like they're going to branch out with Avengers and a lot of the standalone movies having as much success as they had, trying to figure, well, how else can we monetize this? And, you know, that's capitalism, I guess. One other thing that came out from that MTV interview with Kevin Feige was the Infinity Gauntlet and beyond. Feige confirmed that the big purple fella that we saw at the end of the Avengers, Thanos, will be the villain in both the Guardians of the Galaxy movie and Avengers 2. So, spoiler alert, I guess he doesn't get killed in one of those. So, don't look for that. Feige mentioned that they've also, you know, had some success throwing in some stuff at the last minute to create buzz. We saw that, obviously, with Thanos at the end of Avengers and all the kind of at the end of Iron Man, at the end of all these movies, they've kind of put something in to tantalize you. And at Comic-Con, they had the Infinity Gauntlet displayed, and this was before, you know, we really knew anything about the direction that they could be going for Guardians of the Galaxy and for Avengers 2. I got to admit, I think I had to look up Thanos when I got back from seeing the Avengers because I had no idea what the hell he was.
Thanos is pretty funny because DC had Darkseid first, and Thanos a lot of the times is generally regarded as a Darkseid ripoff. So for Marvel to make Thanos a villain kind of seems like a kick in the balls to DC, because it's almost, for the casual fan, if DC puts Darkseid in a movie, it's like, hey,
that's a
ripoff.
Yeah.
But Thanos is a badass, and Marvel, they're continuing to play the right cards and ride a hot streak. They mentioned the success of throwing stuff in at the last second. I don't think that's necessary, because as long as they're riding this hot streak, people are going to see Marvel franchises, even something like Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, and I think everything with Gunn being confirmed as the director, I think that's kind of a boon to that movie where, you know, I can't, it sounded interesting, but it's not a comic property that I care about. But when you attach someone like Gunn, that makes me interested because I like his work. And being that it has his blessing, it's being overseen by Whedon. I kind of think you're right. I don't know that Marvel it needs a lot of extra buzz right now. But also, like you're saying, everything they do seems to be the right call.
It's funny because people will see this movie just to see what happens after the credits.
I think it'll be interesting to see how they kind of work with one villain into what we assume are going to be separate storylines. Although I had read something a while back that in the Guardians of the Galaxy movie, there could be some element of time travel in which those heroes show up during like current Avengers time.
Okay. Loki was the villain became the villain in Thor, spoiler alert, and then was the villain in the Avengers.
Right.
But another funny thing about Thor is there's an Easter egg. You can actually see the Infinity Gauntlet.
Yeah.
And if you left the Avengers saying to yourself, well, how the hell did Thor get here? Because the bridge was closed at the end of Thor. And there's a scene where it's like, what kind of magic did your father conjure up to get you here?
Yeah.
The rumor is that it may have something to do with the Infinity Gauntlet.
Yeah, that would be neat. I mean, that was in the vault there at Asgard.
Yeah.
Like they had, yeah, the Infinity Gauntlet was there. So yeah, and that could even be something, maybe there's a deleted scene on the Blu-ray.
Which, we're nerding out here.
Yeah, I guess you're probably right. But what the hell? Like, people that are listening to our podcast probably into comic books. And I mean, for Christ's sake, they're listening to internet radio. It's kind of nerdy, you nerds. Maybe in the mid-90s, we're familiar with a television program by the name of Baywatch. And if you weren't familiar with it then, you may be familiar with it because Paramount is looking to resurrect that once buoyant franchise, we'll say. And Robert Ben Grant of Reno 911 fame has signed on to direct it. Peter Tolan will write the script, i.e., of Rescue Me fame, and Ivan Reitman will produce. So I got to admit, like, I like Robert Ben-Gurion, most of his stuff. I really like Ivan Reitman. So I'm kind of turning on this already. When I'd heard there was going to be a Baywatch movie, I thought, this can be nothing but shit. But now I think it's probably about a 50-50 shot. It's said to be tonally similar to Stripes, which would make sense given Reitman's involvement. And we haven't confirmed yet if Hasselhoff or Pamela Anderson or anybody else was on that show.
Who's that mustache guy?
I don't know. Yasmin Bleeth was on that show too, wasn't she?
Yasmin Bleeth. There was Gina Lee Nolan. Was she on
there?
Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah, there were a lot of them. But
a lot of skanks.
Robert Ben-Gurion wrote a ton of stuff.
He's like a mustache guy.
Yeah, he is. And his filmography is huge as far as stuff he's written. As far as directing goes, he did Balls of Fury, which wasn't so great, and Reno 911, the movie. This gives me the impression it's definitely going to be like a potty humor comedy.
Oh, yeah.
It kind of reminds me of, remember when the Brady Bunch made the Brady Bunch movies?
I do.
It was based on the show, but it was a parody of the show at the same time. That's what this is going to be.
That's kind of what I was hoping for. Like, originally, I thought they were just going to, like, play it straight. Like, oh, yeah, we're doing a Baywatch movie. Why wouldn't we? Like, what the hell's your problem?
There's going to be Ski-Doo jumps and...
Exactly. I don't even have Ski-Doos anymore. But I didn't like really either of the Piranha movies. But I thought one of the things that 3DD did very well was the Hasselhoff Baywatch send-up part of that. And he seemed to be totally okay with poking fun at that whole thing. And I think that, if they did a whole movie like that, maybe that's too much. Maybe I don't need, 90 minutes of it. But I definitely think that that'd be a better idea than thinking they can do a legitimate Baywatch movie.
Yeah, I put it this way. If they tried to do a shooting straight Baywatch movie that was suitable for theaters and not late night Cinemax, I don't think it could happen. I don't think they would get the support. But making a movie that makes fun of them, their own franchise, I think they will. Well, obviously, they have the support to get it made.
Yeah, definitely. So we go from the summer, Baywatch, to winter. Winter's Tale getting a little hotter. Matt Bomer of Magic Mike and White Collar, and I will submit Chuck in there as well, and Lucy Griffiths of True Blood have signed on to be in Akiva Goldsman's Winter's Tale. Akiva Goldsman, no stranger to a blockbuster himself, directed I Am Legend and Mr. and Mrs. Smith. This cast already includes Will Smith, Russell Crowe, Colin Farrell, William Hurt, and Eva Marie Saint. Add in what can only be an oppressive score by Hans Zimmer. That seems to be the only kind he writes. And I think, just judging by who's in it, and the director, I think it's kind of the making of a blockbuster right here.
Oh, yeah. We have to wait and see how large the roles are going to be. Obviously, Akiva Goldsman has a pretty good relationship with Will Smith.
And Will Smith is a smaller role. Colin Farrell is the star of the movie.
Okay.
So he's the headliner. Everybody else, I mean, if you have Will Smith and Russell Crowe in kind of smaller supporting roles, I mean, that kind of shows you like what kind of power these movies already got.
I mean, it's based on the Mark Halperin novel. And with everyone involved, it's at least going to be financially successful, but probably more than that.
Yeah, I think so. And I got to admit, I wasn't a real big fan of I Am Legend. Mr. and Mrs. Smith was enjoyable for what it was. So I'm kind of interested to see, you know, if this is going to be, whether it was going to go to the niche poll or to the mainstream poll. Casey Affleck looking to work the poll with his big brother and Matt Damon. Damon and the elder Affleck will produce Race to the South Pole, which, if you can believe it, is about a British and a Norwegian explorer racing to the South Pole in the early 1900s.
Matt Damon.
Yeah.
For me, it, whatever. I would say fast forward to Ben Affleck's next directing effort, which is about Boston crime lord Whitey Bulger, where Affleck's going to direct and Matt Damon is going to play Whitey Bulger. So I'm looking forward to that one. This one, eh.
Yeah, I think this will be one of those ones that, you know, if you really want to know what happens, you can find out. Like, it's already happened. Yeah. I don't want to spoil it for any of you, but, I mean,
it's kind
of
like the
one
old,
of them gets there first and the other one doesn't get there.
It's like the old Disney movies, like, based on things that happened. And,
yeah, that you could easily just read about. But, you know, if you don't like books, and I'm on the record, I don't like books. You know, I think this could be an interesting kind of – sometimes those adventure movies seem to do well for whatever reason, tales of human triumph. But I think it'd probably do better if instead of the British guy, it was an American dude.
Yeah.
America.
Yeah, America.
America. If there's one thing that you can say about Roman Polanski, only one thing – he's definitely got a type. His next film, Venus in Fur, will be based off a Broadway play. It'll feature a very small cast in a single location, which, not that I've seen Carnage, but that was his last movie. That can be said to fit that description as well. So where do you fall on Mr. Polanski?
Polanski's made some really awesome stuff in a couple of my favorite movies. Like, he made Repulsion, Rosemary's Baby, and Chinatown.
Yeah.
And all of those are really good. But he's also made some really... not bad stuff, just stuff I haven't seen and stuff I had no interest in seeing.
Yeah, I think he's definitely, especially now, is kind of just making what he wants to make.
Yeah, this one's very meta because it's him directing his wife in a movie about a guy directing his wife.
Yeah, but, yeah. I mean, it sounds kind of weird, and I will admit that there are I really do like when plays get turned into movies. It might sound weird, but like a lot of Hitchcock stuff, like Rope was based off a play, and that's a phenomenal movie. Just the way he shot it, the way there's a half an hour between a cut in that movie. So just the fact that, you know, the actors have to memorize an entire block, they've got to do everything. It's so different from the way movies usually get made that I think that they can be refreshing, because I don't get to see a lot of live theater.
Right. Look at a few years ago, Frost Nixon was originally a play and became a movie nominated for Best Picture.
Glengarry Glen Ross.
Yeah, the craw on my side about this one, it's shot in French, which Polanski's wanted to do. And
next movie, I don't think it's shot in French, but it is going to feature lots of foreigners. It's 47 Ronin, and 47 Ronin may have 47 Ronin, but they're down one director. Whoa. Originally scheduled for a November release, but then it got pushed to February. Now it's looking at a Christmas 2013 release. Why? Well, let me tell you. They've had some delays due to some crazy reshoots and a ballooning budget. Carl Rynch has been booted from the editing room after his budget has reached $225 million.
A lot of hooch.
That is a lot of hooch. Largely based on reshoots of Keanu during the film's final fight sequence. They're trying to give him a larger presence in the film, and he does have such dynamic facial expressions that, yeah, I could see spending an extra, you know, $50 million to make sure you capture his look of utter bewilderment.
Yeah, this sounds a lot like Last Samurai, except it's like a fantastical take.
Yeah, he's battling some kind of demon.
Yeah, there's like witches and giants and Keanu and George Carlin traveling through time.
Oh, if only. Yeah, so it's
inevitable it's going to lose money.
Oh, definitely.
It's already at $225 million. It's not going to make that much. It's going to cost more by the end. It's going to lose money.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. We're at $225 million, and it's not done yet. I mean, they are still working on reshoots. I mean, they've booted out the director. Well, no, I take that back. I'm pretty sure most of his reshoots are done. I think they're done with that at that point. But, you know, the film still has to be edited. There still has to be marketing, which studios will essentially use that as well. Yeah, the budget, we used $50 million in marketing. So, you know, that gets added to the budget so that when they try and say the film lost money because it didn't make his budget, that's, you know, kind of where they try and get you there too. Universal's co-chair, Donna Langley, will try and step in and cut the movie together just to get it out. Like we said, they've already pushed it back at least a year, essentially a year from when it was supposed to come out. Reshoots. Killing this movie, killed G.I. Joe. So I guess the long story short is don't cut Keanu or Channing Tatum out of your movie or it will die. In this week's no-brainer of the week, Melissa McCarthy is in talks to be in Hangover 3. She's working on logistics between her television program to take a small role in the movie. It's rumored to be about the size cameo that rumors were flying around for Hangover 2, that Liam Neeson and Mel Gibson were going to be in that film. So she's looking to do something along that size of a role.
The only thing that worries me is the role she played in Bridesmaids. It can't be the same.
Can't it?
It can. But then the movie itself can't be the same as the first two, because Hangover 1 and 2 are the same movie. So Hangover 3 needs a new script and something fresh, or the 40 billion people that go see it are going to be angry.
I don't know. I didn't see Hangover 2. I had seen enough from Hangover 1 to know that I didn't need to be hungover again. I like Melissa McCarthy enough, I guess. Her involvement, I can see where, you know, she could definitely add something to the movie, but it doesn't make me want to go sit through what I perceive will be another 97 minutes of the same kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So I think if she actually had a larger role in the movie, I might be more interested, just because I would guess that there would be something different, but, you know, whatever. Neil before Lego. Spoiler alert, Lego has announced a line of Superman toys that may tip off the involvement of a mystery villain. Zack Snyder won't say who his villain is, but Lego doesn't give a shit. They're going to be releasing a Black Zero-related playlist in Black Zero, which I had to look up because, again, I don't read books, even if they've got pictures. Apparently, this guy, a real bad dude, he destroyed Krypton at some point and shows up at Earth to try and do the same thing. I'm guessing Superman doesn't like that. In other villain-related news, Michael Shannon is on the record as saying, I'm playing Zod in the movie. And there's been shots of a guy flying around fighting Superman who looked an awful lot like Michael Shannon. So, I mean, I think it's pretty safe to assume that Zod is going to be the main villain. Are they already going like Batman Returns and squeezing too many villains into this?
Well, from what I know about Black Zero, I'm not a huge Superman fan, but Black Zero is kind of like a bounty hunter who's hired to destroy Krypton. So, but isn't Zod from Krypton?
Zod is a Kryptonian.
Right,
yeah.
So.
And Zod's chick, whatever the fuck her name was.
Yeah, I don't know.
She's in a movie too.
This is the world we live in now. In a movie of this magnitude, there's going to be toys and all sorts of things with the internet and everything. It's going to come out. And DC's, like, you know, they could try as hard as they want to say, you know, we're going to keep this hush-hush. But look at it. It's how many, 8 months out or something?
Yeah, I mean, this isn't the first time that Lego has essentially ruined something. I mean, there's always, I don't think it's a secret, I enjoy Star Wars. And there's been many times where, you know, some of the action figures that have been released at conventions, like, oh, hey, wait a minute. Why is there a Darth Maul action figure and why has he got spider legs? What could this possibly mean? I mean, shit like that happens. This isn't the first time. It won't be the last time. I just find it interesting that, especially with Snyder being so hush-hush, that every time we turn around, whether it's an actor in the movie or whether it's, you know, Lego, he's just getting under it. This guy can't catch any breaks. I truly feel sorry for him. I think our next story would get Dave's seal of approval. It's about a bunch of chicks, all of which, well, most of which, I think he kind of has a little thing for. Taylor Swift has signed on to play one of the leads in this next film. She'll be playing Joni Mitchell. The cattle call is out for actresses to play Carly Simon and Carole King in the John Sayles adaptation of Sheila Weller's Girls Like Us. Allison Williams, Jessica Paré, and Annalee Tipton are testing for Carly Simon, Allison Pill and her boobs, Olivia Thirlby, Ari Gaynor, and Zoe Kazan will all be testing for Carole King.
The nice thing about this movie is that landing Taylor Swift will allow, because that'll be the lead, it'll allow them to cast lesser-known, more talented actresses to play the other roles. Funny thing about this movie, though, is it technically doesn't have a green light yet, so they're auditioning people without having the go-ahead.
I guess they're auditioning, but it seems to me like they're kind of past, like, auditioning. I mean, they're kind of narrowing it down,
yeah.
Essentially. Yeah, it does seem a little bit like putting the cart before the horse, but I feel like having Taylor Swift involved, there's people buy her albums.
Yeah.
So people will go.
It's gonna,
those people will see her in a movie.
Taylor Swift being involved with this does a lot. It allows, you know, you're going to get a certain percentage of butts in seats
right.
based on Taylor Swift alone. And like I said, it allows you to pass on maybe the big name to put someone more perfect into another role because you've got Taylor Swift's star power to fall
back.
And
it allows you to cast those roles a little cheaper. If you're looking for someone that can sing, I mean, you know, Anne Hathaway is a name that comes to mind. She can sing real well. She's easy on the eyes, but she costs a lot of money. But you can take a look at Mrs. Draper, and she can kind of sing too. She's not so bad, I guess, but she comes a hell of a lot cheaper. So I think that, like we're saying with Taylor Swift, it kind of allows you to get people that can act, because we're really not sure if she can or not. And I'm not sure what they're going to do with the singing, if they'll actually have to do that or they'll record somebody else doing that. I can't really say that I really care too much about this movie.
No.
I don't think it's not for us.
Mm-mm.
No, it's for ladies and ladies that like ladies. This next movie is maybe it's for us. New Line Cinema's Spy Guys gets lonely. Jorma Taccone of The Lonely Island signs on to direct The Spy Guys. According to the logline, it's kind of like Ocean's 11. It's also crossed with a little bit of True Lies and Mission Impossible.
Jorma Taccone from SNL, Lonely Island. He directed MacGruber. But the problem I have with this is that listing Ocean's 11, True Lies, and Mission Impossible, with who's involved, I don't think that that's what's going to happen. I think we're looking more at like Date Night or Horrible Bosses.
Yeah, Mission Impossible, not really known as a comedy. True Lies had some funny stuff in it. And Ocean's 11, I guess, was kind of light. But none of those are comedies. And this definitely is going to be a comedy. So, yeah, I think you're right. But, you know, a lot of times when they throw out these log lines, it's just like, I mean, all Ocean's 11, huge franchise.
Right.
Mission Impossible, huge franchise. And True Lies, I think they're still working on coming out with a sequel to that at some point. So these are all movies that people know instantly.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, that'll work. But I don't know. For me, Spies Like Us, that's if you're going to do a comedy spy movie, let's just watch that again and forget about this.
Yeah.
We don't really need it. Kate Bosworth needed on the home front. She will join Jason Statham, James Franco, Winona Ryder in Homefront, which is the Sly Stallone-written drug movie that Dave mentioned a couple weeks ago for having a character by the name of Gator. And that is the character that will be played by James Franco. He's a meth dealer, I think.
Yeah. This cast is awesome. And
yes.
The story sounds about right for a Jason Statham movie. He's an ex-DEA agent who wants to make peace by moving to a small town, only to find out that in his small town, James Franco is a drug pin with a meth-addicted sister played by
Bosworth. Yeah.
Right. Breaking Bad has made meth cool, but don't do meth, kids.
Yeah, meth... Breaking Bad is great. It is a great show, and it does, I guess, put meth back in. Where maybe this wouldn't have been meth before. Maybe it would have been crack.
Yeah.
Or, I don't know, heroin, H, the white pony.
Horse.
Yeah. Whatever. But, Jesus, like, the fact that Stallone wrote this really kind of makes me want to see it.
Yes.
I think it's going to be
absolutely
an absolute train wreck. And with a name like Gator.
I hope Franco is over the top, like ridiculous. Just because he can be. Because it's like, oh, it's just a Stallone movie.
Everybody else is going to be. I mean, you know, Statham, like, he's not known for being understated. So we'll see. I mean, I think this movie is just going to be so ridiculous, but I'm sure Jim will be there opening night.
Oh, yeah. Standing. Yeah, our buddy Jim will probably get this tattooed on his chest.
Dave's not getting a tattoo of any movie that is a found footage movie, except for maybe that dinosaur one he was talking about. He hates found footage movies, and I imagine he'll hate this one too. Marlon Wayans's A Haunted House has been picked up by Open Road for a January 2013 release. It is going to be a spoof in the vein of Scary Movie, mm-hmm. Also having some Marlon Wayans attachment. A spoof of the found footage genre, which I guess just proves that genre has officially jumped the shark. Open Road, you know, like, I just wanted to say, who the hell are these people and why are they doing this to us? But they're also giving us End of Watch and Looper. So
yeah,
I was like, all right.
Maybe it's just an easy sell and they're going to make money and don't care whether it gets panned. But it features Cedric the Entertainer and Nick Swardson. And according to Open Road CEO Tom Ortenberg, it will allow you to, quote, laugh uncontrollably, end quote.
Well, I'm glad that it will allow me to laugh uncontrollably, because there have been times, a lot of times, when I've been watching films and I've thought, if only I was given the ability by a movie executive to laugh uncontrollably, I would really enjoy this film. So thank you, Open Road CEO
Tom Ortenberg.
Ortenberger. Thank you. 14-year-olds and foreigners get pumped. M. Night may be back to direct The Last Airbender 2. While the movie was critically trashed, it did manage to make a measly $300 million worldwide. It could do worse. So he's looking to find his next project to work on after Earth. And word out on the Twitter sphere and the M. Night blogosphere is that he has a draft written for Airbender 2 that he kind of likes.
Yeah, M. Night Shyamalan doesn't care what people think. He kind of marches to the beat of his own drummer. But I can't understand why he'd revisit this franchise.
Because it made $300 million.
He's a creative guy, and it seems like a better outlet would be writing something original, which is After Earth.
Yeah.
But if you don't know about After Earth, it's going to be Will Smith and his little clone of himself, his son. And it takes place in space, and they fly spaceships and stuff.
Which sounds awesome. Yeah, whatever. I think I've kind of decided that I'm done with Mr. Shyamalan.
Just now?
No, probably about 5 or 6 years
ago.
What's
that, The Gardening? What was that one movie?
The one with
Marky Mark. Yeah.
Yeah, which I heard wasn't terrible.
What are you talking about? It was awful.
I didn't see it. I'm just saying I heard it wasn't terrible,
no,
but I had already said, nah, hell with you.
Come on, plants. What are you doing, plants? Just go home. That was Marky Mark yelling at plants for the whole movie.
Okay, maybe I do feel like I have seen it now. But yeah, Last Airbender 2. Made a bunch of money. I'm not surprised, you know, that there's some interest in doing a sequel. And I guess it's somewhat just somebody liked that movie. I mean, he liked doing it. It just, you know, it seemed here in America people didn't like it. But Americans are dumb, I guess. The rest of the world knows better. Michael Bay is an asshole. And he will direct Transformers 4. Those are both facts. First, he said he wasn't going to return to direct the fourth movie about giant transforming robots. And I think we were all a bit excited about that. But then he did a bit of soul searching, and he came to the conclusion that another director would come in and possibly ruin the franchise. I'm going to read you directly from the Huffington Post article. This is Michael Bay. I thought I was done. Then The Ride came out, and the 2.5-hour lines, and you're thinking, oh my God, someone's going to take this over. And you start doing a lot of soul searching, like, okay, I'm about to do a little movie, Pain and Gain, and the studio says they want to restart the franchise. And someone could come in here and screw it up, you know? So I'm thinking, if I do this last one, we set it on a new footing and we change a lot of things, but we keep the history of the three in place. But we broaden it out so it can be set up and carried on. It'd have a better chance for survival, I guess, you know? To which the reporter has to just be dumbfounded, just says, right. So Bay goes on. So it's just one of those things. It's like, when you look at what's going on in the film business with the franchise frenzy right now, why is Cameron doing two more Avatar movies? I don't know, probably because it's the highest fucking grossing movie of all time. That's just my guess, but now I'm editorializing. Why is Peter Jackson doing three more Hobbit movies? I don't know, probably because the last one won fucking Best Picture. I don't know. The movies are in the same world as Lord of the Rings. When you have a franchise, it's just hard to give it up. No. No, it's not hard to give it up. Jackson gave up on The Hobbit. Del Toro was supposed to direct it, but he couldn't because he's doing Pacific Rim and he's doing some other things. So Peter Jackson reluctantly went back in. He wasn't afraid that somebody else might undermine something he did.
Bay needs to get a clue because he...
is a dick.
He's a dick. He's criticizing Cameron for Avatar. Cameron wrote and directed Avatar and...
which was always supposed to be a trilogy.
Right.
I mean, that was one of those things. Avatar ends, and it could end there.
But Transformers existed for 20, 30 years before Michael Bay touched it, and he's talking about it living on. You didn't create Transformers.
No, and if anything, I think he fucked it up.
Yeah.
I mean, the jive-talking Transformers, maybe it's cool with, you know, 12-year-olds now, but like you're saying, Transformers was around before Michael Bay. It'll be around after Michael Bay. So is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
And he's going to fuck that up.
Yeah, he's absolutely going to fuck that up. So for him to say, oh, man, I don't know if I want another director getting a hold. They could possibly. No, somebody else could come in and do it better.
Right. Maybe that's what he's worried about.
I'm sure that's what he's worried about.
I mean, this guy probably walks around difficult to hold himself up as big as his head is. But speaking of that, a buddy of mine and I had a discussion about whether it's physically possible for Michael Bay to make what we would call a low-budget movie. And I was looking at Poster Roundup this week, just looking at posters of the new movies coming out, you know, Skyfall and Room 237 and such. I see a poster for a movie called Pain and Gain, and it's just like a creatine bottle on the poster. So I start fishing around and trying to see what it's about. It's featuring Mark Wahlberg and Dwayne Johnson about... a couple of bodybuilders who like kind of stumble upon being killers. And I take a look, it's a $20 million budget, and it's directed by Michael Bay.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, we kind of referenced that in the article that he makes it sound like the studio will allow him to do this small, independent $20 million movie if he does Transformers 4. And that does happen sometimes. In fairness to Michael Bay, sometimes there are trade-offs the director will make, movie A, in order to, you know, get funding or in order to get permission to direct movie B. And if that's the case, so be it. It doesn't sound anything like a Michael Bay movie. I don't know where this came from.
Me either.
It's an original story, which he hasn't done in quite a while. I'm sure there will be explosions in it at some point.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, it's just...
I had to double check and make sure
it sounds interesting.
Bodybuilders weren't from space or, like, there wasn't a scene in the movie where, like, they murdered someone so they have to flee the country and they're going to go to Mars. Like, there's... as far as I can tell, there might be some gunfights, but I don't think there's going to be catastrophe or unrealistic, you know, chases or robots. So, yeah, it's definitely a different direction for Michael Bay.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's described as a black comedy, and I guess that's one genre I can't really think off the top of my head that he's been into at all.
How about Bad Boys?
That was a good one.
Yeah.
That was a good one. I'm just going to let that one breathe for a little bit. But, yeah, as much shit, and I talked a lot of shit about Michael Bay, and I stand behind most of it. I'm kind of interested to see how this will come out.
Yeah, I'm going to see it.
There's no possible way that it can completely change my opinion of the guy, but I don't think he's a terrible filmmaker. I think he's made some terrible movies recently.
It's him as a person, I think.
That doesn't help either.
It's just how full of himself he is, like making comments like someone's going to ruin Transformers. It's just he gets carried away and he thinks everything he's doing is in the right.
Yeah, And I mean, I guess it might be hard to argue that those movies do make money.
Oh yeah.
And I guess, you know, those at the end of the day, that's what matters. Like, you know, if I like a movie, who gives a shit if it made $38 at the box office because I saw it four times. But you know,
The thing I like is the conversation I had with my buddy. We were like, Michael Bay should make an indie movie for $1 million because it would be hilarious. Because his movies are known for having these insane effects and explosions and stuff. So you're looking at Mark Wahlberg and Dwayne Johnson. Both of those guys have to command quite a bit of money.
Oh, yeah.
And the budget's only $20 million. So with how much money going to them, like how much is he actually making this movie on?
Yeah, I guess we'll have to see. And sometimes, you know, the reported budget's $20
million.
But,
yeah.
You know, we'll see. If the movie does end up getting made, we'll see what the budget ends up afterwards. One movie, and at this point, the last thing, you know, that's really kind of important is the budget for it. But it's another one where it's just gotten ridiculous. And it's Gore Verbinski's The Lone Ranger. That's now the budget is like the last of their worries. Disney not releasing a lot of information on it, but recently a crew member died while making the film, drowned, apparently setting up some kind of underwater scene. And it's one of those things that, you know, it's terrible when it happens, and it really kind of makes the rest of the movie just, you know, well, what the hell? Like, because now whenever that movie comes out, you know that somebody died seeing it or died making it. So it's very difficult to really, it's difficult for me to set that apart. I mean, I think of the Twilight Zone movie, like that was 30 years ago, and you know, people still like that is the one thing about that movie. And directors, you know, understandably do have a hard time trying to even go back and look at that work. But I don't know how, you know, you'd try and just finish the project at that point. I mean, it's just, ugh.
Right. I'm sorry to hear news like this. I mean, it's horrible. But there have been reality shows, television shows, movies where people have died, and they're usually canceled. That's usually when there's this much strife. It's just, you know what, guys, let's pack our bags, go home. We tried. And in this situation, it sounds like the crew member had a heart attack before he drowned. So it wasn't like...
Because of the safety.
Because of the movie.
Right.
It was, you know, just like a natural cause.
Yeah, I wouldn't blame, you know, I'm not blaming Disney. I'm not blaming Verbinski or anybody. You know, when something like that happens, some of the stunts and the things that they do in movies now, you know, we kind of forget just watching them. Yeah, it's one thing if it's CG. But, you know, a lot of the stuff they still do practically. And when they do stuff like that, you know, you've got stuntmen, you've got coordinators, you've got all sorts of people, you know, that make this stuff work. And it's amazing that a lot of this stuff gets done and people don't, you know, get hurt. So, I mean, on the one hand, it is terrible, you know, when something like this happens. But I think that it's also kind of, you know, one of the things that you got to stop and think, hey, you know, people out there must be doing a really good job so that this doesn't happen, you know, all the time. And again, you know, if the guy, you know, had a heart attack, it's not, you know, due to any, you know, oversight on the set, but it's just, I think it's one more thing that's kind of working against that movie, which seems to have been doomed kind of from the start.
Yeah.
To kind of transition away from that. Before we get into trailers, the first couple trailers we've got coming up are films that are on my fantasy film ball list. At this point, we're going to pause and we're going to give Kevin a chance. And by a chance, I mean, I'm going to demand that he is on record with his five fantasy film ball picks. So, Kevin, what is your first pick?
I think I've been running away from you guys for about
at least 3 weeks, yeah.
Refusing to do this. I don't want to criticize any of my listeners because I like you guys, especially the new ones. But if you don't have the Hobbit,
we like you the most.
But if you don't have the Hobbit on your list, you're kind of crazy.
I don't have the Hobbit on my list.
Well, you and Dave, in fairness, picked movies, you know, back and forth.
If you don't have the Hobbit,
but if you
you're
had a
ballsy.
Choice, if you had a choice,
that's what you are.
Oh,
yeah,
get out of here.
The Hobbit would have been my number one pick,
so
and
there
I think
you go.
A lot of people would. Yeah.
So the Hobbit's going to make a ton of money. It's going to win a lot of awards and be nominated for a lot of awards, and that's the name of this game.
It is. Fair enough. I mean, yeah, I think the Hobbit is kind of the prohibitive number one pick, and I think that most people probably would. I don't know that anybody's going to argue with you. If they don't put it on their list, maybe it's just because, like, look, what the hell? Everybody's got
let's
that.
Have fun.
Just be
yeah.
different. And I'll applaud you for that.
Yeah. Number two, The Master. And this is a film that After seeing it,
you still picked it.
I still picked it, okay, because there are some truly great performances.
Masterful
in this movie.
Masterful performances.
Yes, Joaquin Phoenix is really great, and I have a hard time believing he's not going to win Best Actor. And the movie actually is making more money than I expected it to, so that helps too. Three, I'm going to get criticized for this, is Cloud Atlas. Just because I did kind of give you shit.
You did.
For having this on your list.
That's all right, because I am fully, and at this point, maybe I'm getting ahead of myself, but I'm reveling all the shit that people have been giving me.
Yeah.
My God, am I going to be so fucking smug when this thing just kicks ass.
At TIFF, it was, people were calling it legendary, film changing. As you can see in the trailer, there's some really cool shit going on.
So. Yeah, and all that stuff is in the trailer.
Yeah.
I think, like, I will be probably the the fourth smuggest person after the Wachowskis and Twinker. It'll be me right after
and
those three.
Plus, people are going to have to see it three times just so they know what the hell is going on. Four, I kind of thought outside of the box, and I kind of linguist myself into picking Twilight, the Breaking Dildo 4 or whatever. Whatever one's coming out. It's going to make
part two
a kajillion dollars. It's not, it might get like a costume design nomination or a, I don't know, but it's going to make a lot of money.
Best Kiss MTV Movie Award.
So I'm in my thinking, the money from this will make up for the money that maybe the Master doesn't
make.
And finally, Argo. I'm just really excited to see this.
A lot of good buzz. I think that'll be a good movie.
I think there's going to be lots of money to be made and lots of awards to be nominated.
All right. So just to recap, you took The Hobbit.
Yes.
You took The Master, Cloud Atlas,
mm-hmm.
Twilight,
mm-hmm.
Argo.
Correct.
Is that five?
Yes.
All right. Excellent. So those are Kevin's five. Feel free to co-opt all five of those.
Be my friend on Facebook. I post quite a bit about the show. Just leave me a comment right in that section with your picks. Because this game's going to be way more fun.
If we have more people playing.
Exactly.
Yeah. You can either find Kevin on Facebook, or you can mail him to us, moviesonup@gmail.com. Tweet him at Dave, at moviesonup, or at Dave Becella. That'd be kind of a fun way to do it. He'll never expect it coming from that way. The aforementioned Cloud Atlas released a TV spot this week, which is kind of rife with clippings from some of the folks that, after seeing the film at TIFF, kind of their essential real quick reviews of it, film changing and other superlatives being thrown about. But now after seeing, you know, probably 6 minutes of the movie, still have no idea what the hell's going on.
Yeah.
It looks beautiful, though.
Yeah, there's a new 2.5-minute trailer. And I thought originally when the 5.5-minute trailer came out that it needed to be 5.5 minutes. It's the first trailer I've ever seen that needed to be that long just so you could know briefly what's going on. And you still kind of don't. But the problem with a 2.5-minute trailer is you do lose some of that beautiful scenery.
Yeah.
The shots you see in the trailer for Cloud Atlas are just gorgeous and they look kind of masterful behind the camera. So, and you lose some of that in this new trailer.
Yeah, so check out the trailer for Cloud Atlas and do it before you make your fantasy film ball picks. That would just be my suggestion. Next movie, also one of my five, and it is Life of Pi. I can say, after seeing the trailer, I do know what this movie's about. But I will also say that some of the shots in this are just gorgeous as well.
Yeah.
Ang Lee, the fella can, he can do some things behind the camera from a cinematography point of view. And I think you can really see, even from the trailer, where a lot of this movie is just going to, like, shine in 3D.
Yeah, that's exactly what I wrote. I mean, Ang Lee's new joint looks dope. But
yo.
It's headed by an all-international cast. Originally, it was supposed to be Tobey Maguire.
Yeah.
And then Ang Lee was like, you know, no offense, but I want to make this all-international. And then, what you see in the trailer is definitely what to expect from the 3D experience. It's just lots of neat things popping up, popping out. It's going to be I'm not a 3D fan, and I actually am pretty against it, but I want to see this in 3D.
I cannot remember what movie I saw this 3D trailer in front of. It was like a teaser, and this was – it might have been Avengers,
because
I know I was there by myself. And I had no idea what the hell was going on, but it was just the kid in the boat, And, like, these fish, just, like, I think they were flying fish. I'm not really certain. I just know there was a bunch of shit that just flew at your face for, like, 2 or 3 minutes. The tigers swiping at your face. I mean, some of the 3D stuff maybe is gimmicky, but I don't think there's been a really, really great 3D movie since Avatar kind of... Avatar didn't start the 3D craze, but it showed people that it could be awesome. Mm-hmm. I guess How to Train Your Dragon was pretty good in 3D. There's been some ones that were decent. I think this might be the next one that people are like, holy shit,
yeah.
3D is awesome.
Yeah.
Our next movie, as far as I can tell, is not in 3D. It is Promised Land. It is a movie that we had kind of talked a bit about before. It's that fracking movie that was written by Matt Damon and John Krasinski about fracking, and it seemed, from everything I read, incredibly boring. After watching the trailer, I will admit that it doesn't look as boring as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, it's a dirty fracking business. It looks like a real solid effort from everyone involved, but this is kind of like Thank You for Smoking or
where a less,
like,
funny version.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of like a legal movie or a... you know, a business movie, and they're not for everyone, but I give this trailer my approval.
Winnie is a movie starring Jennifer Hudson and Terrence Howard. Howard will be playing Nelson Mandela, and Jennifer Hudson will be playing his wife, Winnie. And this movie is kind of taken from her perspective. I think we're all at least somewhat familiar with the Nelson Mandela story. He really liked rugby, and that's what he was most famous for. And this just kind of shows it's a darker side of that story from what is perceived to be a bit darker of a character in his wife.
The reason that this trailer came out is because this is a film that's been on the shelf for a couple years, and the new trailer is recut, hoping that someone will give it a U.S. release. I won't be that person. South Africa just has a very complex history. It's hard to tell that story.
I've read it's a relatively truthful account, so we'll kind of have to see.
Yeah.
Another, you know, truthful account of historical events, relatively speaking. 42, it's the Jackie Robinson movie, starring a ridiculously crusty-looking Han Solo. the only thing I really took away from this trailer was, I mean, does anything with the name, with the loose affiliation of Brooklyn, does Jay-Z have to be involved in everything? I get it.
Like, yeah.
Can it be about Jackie Robinson instead of having to hear your music before we even see?
That's what was interesting about this trailer to me, is the tone and what you see of the movie does not match the way the trailer is presented.
Yeah.
I think if I'm a Jay-Z fan and I hear a Jay-Z song in the trailer and I'm like getting pumped to go see this movie, and then the movie, like, I'm going to go out on a limb and say there's no Jay-Z music in the actual movie, that it's more of a historical telling of Jackie Robinson, I'm kind of confused. It's when it's almost a cheap way, like cheap pop, to get people to see the movie.
Our next trailer, I got to admit, I was kind of pumped to see. It is a English version of a pod favorite, Nicky Winding Refn's movie, Pusher. He's before really being known in the U.S., he did his Pusher trilogy, and we're kind of going to go back, rehash, and do it with some American-speaking folks.
Yeah, he steps out, and Nicholas Winding Refn, he's going to produce this one. But having seen the original Pusher trilogy, Nicholas Winding Refn of Drive fame, this movie's kind of like it's like an adrenaline rush. It's like as you're watching, it's like you can feel your heart beat, and you're kind of, you know, it's kind of a thrill ride.
So does this one seem like it's pretty yeah. similar
oh, yeah.
to the okay? Because I would like to see them, but I just haven't gotten around to it. They're not making it easy on me at this point. So yeah, maybe I'll just wait for the American version. That'd be just fine with me. Another podcast fave, definitely on the level of Nicky Refn would be the Coen Brothers. This next movie, Gambit, is their take on a 1966 Michael Caine joint. It looks a bit like your standard caper fare, where there's essentially the movie revolves around trying to sell a fake piece of art to Alan Rickman.
Who's nude?
Hans Gruber. Yeah.
Yes, nude Professor Snape. I love the Coen Brothers. They're top three favorites, maybe. I don't know. I love those guys, but this looks to me maybe a little more Intolerable Cruelty and a little less Big Lebowski.
I guess, you know, we were kind of talking about foreign movies before. The next one, Stoker, by a foreign guy, Chan-Wook Park, Old Boy, Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance, Lady Vengeance. Those flicks, Stoker just came out with it's a teaser trailer. I wouldn't say it's like a full trailer deal.
Right. One of the actors from Prison Break actually wrote this under a different name, mm-hmm, and wanted to get the script out there on his own merit, not because he was an actor. And it actually ended up on the Blacklist, which for our listeners who don't know, the Blacklist is like a top 10 list of scripts that are out there floating that haven't been made into movies yet. So this one, like we said, not a lot of footage. It fell into the lap of Chan-Wook Park, but it kind of looks like Hitchcock's Shadow of a Doubt. Like,
I think Dave talked about this movie a while ago. He kind of keyed on the guy from Prison Break.
Yeah,
I forget how he came to bring it up, but we had mentioned it before, and I just wanted to say that, you know, the trailer's out there now, starring Nicole Kidman and Mia Wasikowska, which you know, Dave seems to enjoy. So check that out. If you harken back to that episode where we talked about a movie and you were like, "What the hell is that?" You could probably say, "What the hell is that?" After you watched the trailer for Nature Calls. I'm not really sure too much about the plot of this movie. Patton Oswalt is a scoutmaster. He's got a bunch of scouts that I guess he kidnapped somehow from his brother, played by Johnny Knoxville. And all sorts of just crazy shit seems to happen.
I like Patton Oswalt quite a bit. I've seen him live do stand-up, but this looks stupid. I'm not a prude, I swear, but I didn't laugh a single time. I didn't even chuckle. I was stone-faced while I watched this trailer. It just rehashed garbage.
Yeah, I think there could be a couple laughs in the movie, but I'm not willing to say that there'd be so much that I'm interested in seeing it. I'm also not really interested in seeing Beautiful Creatures, which may not surprise that it's based on a teen book series. And the best that I can say is, if after watching the trailer, it seems like Twilight with witches.
Yeah, we always talk about what the next Twilight is. But I truly think we found it. This is based on a 4-book series, but it almost looks a little too copycat. I showed it to my girlfriend, who actually is a Twilight fan, likes the movies and everything. And she pointed out that the cinematography actually looks very similar. The whole style is the same.
Yeah, I think it seemed like the colors were very similar to Twilight, and by that I mean pasty. I guess you could also say not a whole lot of color going on in this next trailer, and that is Citadel. I'd like to bring it up because it won the Midnighters Award, the Midnighters Audience Award at South by Southwest. It's about an agoraphobic guy who has to protect his baby from what appears to be some kind of creepy hooded thugs.
Yeah, it kind of has a 28 Days Later feel.
Yeah.
Maybe because it's English, but it's, from what you can see of the monsters, it's pretty neat. And you see this guy pushing this like a stroller through these empty streets, and it's really neat.
It's a creepy looking movie, and obviously it got some good play at South by Southwest. So I just wanted to mention that there's a trailer up for that. There's also a trailer up for a movie that I would say starring is probably I'm using that word loosely, starring our very own Dave Bissella, starring Eric and Dave talking with Eric and Dave's, Eric Cribbley, those two fellas, are in Cleveland, I Love You. I think we've talked about it a little bit on this podcast, and I'm pretty sure they've talked about it on theirs as well. There's a trailer up for that. It can be found at clevelandiloveyoumovie.com. I think that's it. If it's not it, that should get you pretty close. But essentially, the trailer is 11 stories by quite a few different writers and quite a few different directors, all kind of hodgepodge together, kind of set through the eyes of Clevelanders. My initial impressions of the trailer are, it's tough for me to kind of get a read on a movie that has so many different plots, mm-hmm, to really see, I don't know, like what the thread that kind of ties them all together. And I presume that there is one. I don't think that this is just an anthology of 11 stories that take place in Cleveland. I got to believe that, you know, there's probably something larger to that, but I'm just not sure what it is from the trailer.
Right. I enjoyed this trailer. Like you said, I failed to see the thread, but I will see it. And we just talked about Nature Calls, and I didn't laugh at all. I actually chuckled a few times through this. Obviously, this trailer doesn't have the same budget as a lot of the other ones we talked about, but yeah, it's enjoyable.
I think there were some parts, and it's, you know, again, the trailer's 2 minutes. So, you know, are they going to show you the best 2 minutes of the movie? No, they're not. But I do think some of the things were in it. I do think it's going to be written well. And that always does make things easier. Of course, being from the region, I'm interested in movies that are filmed in Cleveland, you know, take place in Cleveland. I'd like to support that when I can. And it doesn't hurt that Eric and Dave are in the movie.
That. Congratulations to Eric and Dave, both those guys I know, and just everybody that was involved in this from the area, from outside the area. It's a good thing you're doing.
Yeah, keep up the good work, and hopefully, I'm sure at some point we'll talk a little bit more about it, either once Dave comes back or once the movie gets a release. Won't be coming out in theaters this week. What will be coming out, you ask? How about Hotel Transylvania, Looper, and Won't Back Down? Those will be in wide release, limited release. Bringing Up Bobby, The Other Dream Team, Solomon Kane, Thandavagam. I have no idea what that is. That's a foreign movie. Vulgaria, The Waiting Room, and podcast favorite, Pitch Perfect. Those are the limited releases for this week. Let's do wide releases out of Hotel Transylvania, Looper, and I'll put Won't Back Down in there too. Which is going to make the most money?
Looper will be first.
Yep, absolutely.
I have Hotel Tranny second.
Yep.
And Won't Back Down.
Sure. And Looper number one in the box office this weekend overall.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Hotel Transylvania number two.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will say that as well. I think Looper is going to do quite well. Hotel Transylvania will do pretty well. Last week was not a tremendous week by box office standards. I think this week will bounce back.
Looper's been out there getting press for two months.
Quite a while.
And it's getting a lot of the primetime press and stuff, so I think it'll do well.
In case you don't make it out to see Looper, or while you're waiting in line to see Pitch Perfect and you've got your mobile device you want to watch a movie on, Kevin, what should the folks watch?
I am telling people to watch podcast favorite Michael Bay's Armageddon. Michael Bay goes out of this world blowing shit up, literally. Roger Ebert described this as the first 150-minute trailer. It's a time capsule for a movie from this point in time, kind of like the epitome of that era of filmmaking. And we talked a lot of shit about Michael Bay earlier in the podcast, but watch this one. It's fun.
My watch this for the week, I'm going to give you a little preview of what Smug Ryan is like. There was a movie a couple weeks ago we talked about in our trailer section that Dave said, man, this is going to suck. And I said, no, Dave, you're wrong. This is going to be a good movie. There's enough good people involved, and it's going to be good. I happened to see on VOD this weekend a film called Butter, and it was good. I'm not going to tell you it's the best movie I've ever seen, but I did LOL several times. I think that the casting was done very, very well. I think everybody that was in it, Jennifer Garner was perfect. She played her. Ty Burrell, I love him from Modern Family. He played kind of the same kind of character. Just everybody that they had picked was so good. And even Hugh Jackman shows up in kind of a small role. He's funny too. So I really think this is, I said it was the Christopher Guest movie that isn't a Christopher Guest movie. That's what it seemed like from the trailer. After watching it, I stand behind that. I absolutely think that this could have been a Christopher Guest movie. And if you like that kind of thing, you like a real kind of weird niche that we completely dive into, then I think if you're into the world of butter carving, this will be for you. That'll about do it for this week. Before we wrap it up, this is our last show in September. And as my iCal says, next month is October. We're going to focus quite a bit on horror movies that month, with Halloween, I guess, is at the end of October. I think there were a couple different ideas that we had, and I think what we're going to do is take a look of the last 10 years, and that'll be 2012 through 2002. Maybe we'll cut it off shortly before 2002. But we're going to take a look at some of our favorite horror movies from that time. If you have any that kind of stick out for you, feel free to send them to us in the email, moviesonup@gmail.com. You can tweet them at Dave at moviesonup, or you can leave them on our Facebook page, which can be accessed from our website, moviesonup.com. Hit the Facebook link, and you're off and running there. You can find Kevin on the Facebook. You can send him some, too.
You can. I'm Kevin Bradway, B-R-A-D-W-A-Y. I'm also at Kevin Bradway on Twitter. And I think I'm going to work and set up a Movies On Up Instagram page so you can kind of see us in action and get a photo documentation that this actually happens.
I don't know what Instagram is.
It's social networking told through pictures.
Do I have to do any more work?
No.
Because I'm not interested. Okay, excellent. Well, there might be an instant thing that gets set up. And maybe also one of my favorite horror movies of the past 10 years. Probably not, but Birdemic. Maybe. If it is one of your favorite of the past 10 years, make sure you show up at Tinseltown Thursday the 25th. You can listen to this podcast that'll come out a couple days before that while you're waiting in line to meet myself, Mr. Kevin.
Yes.
And maybe Dave. We'll see. But Thursday, October the 25th, 8 o'clock, Tinseltown here in lovely Boardman OH. In case we don't see you then. You'll keep in mind your horror movies. We'll see you next week. Keep it up.